Hello, everyone. Hopefully you're having and or had a wonderful day today. If you're new here, welcome. My name is Drew Joyner. And for this week's episode, we're continuing the interview series that I'm currently conducting on the podcast, talking to different folks, having conversations, having a good time. And this week we interviewed a YouTuber. And I absolutely love talking to YouTubers because for one, I identify myself as a YouTuber, as a content creator, and being able to talk to people in that kind of same discipline is really enticing, and just it's interesting to pick their mind. But I think that for anyone who is a creative of any type of discipline, or if you're just curious about my life or curious about today's guest life, this is going to be a great episode for you to tap into. Hence why you're already here. This week's guest is This Is Antoine, or Ant for short. I actually never got his last name, so I don't know his last name, but he is a fashion content creator. I primarily know him as the tech wear mogul, the tech wear god, and that's kind of what his videos are identified as. But as he's developed in his content creation, in his YouTube journey, he's kind of evolved his channel to talk about more and more topics. And he actually reached out. He's a fan of the podcast, like Samuel Zelig, the team last week. They're fans of the podcast. He reached out. He wanted to be on. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for what he does and what he's continued to do over the course of many years on YouTube. So I was like, yeah, come on, let's talk. Let's get to talking. He's all the way across the world in the UK. So he was like late at night doing this interview, and it was a pleasure to have him on. If you are new here, make sure to give us a 5-star review. If you're a returning listener, make sure to give us a 5-star review. I'm giving the same assignment for both people. Without further ado, let's get into the live intro. Roll the tape, Drew. Okay, I'm rolling it. I think more and more people recognize how difficult it is to get to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. Today's guest has that and some. I want to welcome, This Is Antoine, Ant, the tech wear king, to the podcast. Ant, how are you doing today, sir?
That was a very good intro. I'm doing very well, thank you. How about you?
You know, I'm doing well. We just asked each other these exact same questions before we started recording. So it's kind of funny in that sense. But yeah, in Denver right now, I'm looking out the window. It's snowy. We just got like 3-5 inches of snow. My hands are freezing. But other than that, it's all good.
Snow's a pretty rare event over here in the UK. So I'd be quite excited if I was getting some snow.
What time is it there?
It is just gone 10 p.m. So I can't see anything out my window.
Wow. That's the thing about time zones, is that I scheduled this and I realized like after I had scheduled it that you're all the way across the world. I was like, is this even going to work? But not many people are willing to do something at 10 p.m. like to get the content, to get the podcast going. So I appreciate you for that, man, for sure.
No, it's all good. This is my fun time. So I get to do fun stuff like this. So it's all good.
For sure. Just to give a bit of background, I kind of was telling you about this before, for the audience too. Your channel has been, I would say, one of the kind of most important fashion channels online on YouTube. I don't know if people have given you the kudos that you deserve necessarily, but I would give it to you for sure and say that, you know, the content that you've been making for a long time, I watched your videos before I even, you know, made videos on YouTube. And just like your style, your fun, your flair is so refreshing. You know, we talked about, you know, the landscape a little bit before we started, but like, I'm definitely excited to kind of dive into your story a bit. So starting off, question numero uno, right off the gates, talk to us a little bit about where you're from and how it was like for you growing up as a kid.
Yeah, sure. First off, thanks for that. It's much appreciated. I kind of feel like I'm just going to go off on a tangent and not answer your question. I kind of feel like I have almost certainly felt like a little bit of an outsider with the whole fashion thing, being so heavily focused on one particular subgenre. Mm. I feel like, you know, you've got all your more general fashion people who talk about the fashion landscape. And then I'm kind of over somewhere else, who's the guy nerding out about Gore-Tex jackets or whatever. I feel like that's maybe changing a little bit now, especially with the kind of changing trend landscapes and stuff. But so it's interesting to hear you say like, oh, you're I'm someone that you kind of considered as part of the wider fashion circle. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, I think if you know, that's a good self-awareness on your part. I think we're talking about, men fashion creators. I think when I just remember being young and like you stumble upon the ones that are making waves, right? And I think, you've had many moments in your journey where you've made waves, and there have been many moments where I went down a rabbit hole of watching two, three, four videos, right? And so that kind of stuck with me, right? So, and for someone else, you're right. Maybe they weren't searching the same types of topics that I was searching, when I was college, late high school age. But I think it's still worth mentioning. And I think you have a good point in saying that. Yeah, I think, you are niche, but I think that for a lot of young people online searching for male creators talking about fashion, I think that your name has to come up, even if it's an under, even if it's like you're somewhat underrated, because I would consider you to be somewhat underrated. I think it's still like, if you know the landscape, if you have respect for all types of art forms, you gotta have the respect for your channel. So,
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah,
question
appreciate
number one again. Back to the
it.
actual question.
Yeah, let's
Where are you
restart.
from? How is it like for you growing up?
Yeah, so as everyone can probably tell from my accent, I am from the UK. I grew up just north of London, a place called Hertfordshire, which is, home counties. My accent is very typical of that, so you can definitely geolocate me just by the way that I talk. So yeah, I kind of grew up in a fairly rural small town. They're called commuter towns. I guess you kind of have a similar US equivalent, so people kind of live in these places like traveling into London by train and stuff. So it's that kind of environment, but overall like pretty nice place, even if not the most sort of fashion forward or anything like that. Definitely London is around where I live. That's definitely the center of all that kind of thing.
Right. So when you were young, are you, because it was a commuter town, did you take trips into London often, or were you mostly staying? You'll have to say the name of your town a couple of times for it to stick in my brain. Were you mostly staying in those parts, or were you also kind of traveling around as well? This is, yeah.
Yeah, I guess a little bit of both. I think I live maybe 40 minutes or something away from central London by train. So it's kind of far enough that you wouldn't necessarily go there every weekend. There's a bit of a like allure, I suppose, with going into London, especially as a kid. You plan the big trip into London, like you're going around Oxford Street and down the shops and all this kind of thing. So yeah, that was definitely something I remember doing as a kid. And that was definitely like the place to do anything particularly interesting or cool. Places like Camden as well, which as a sort of 13-year-old seem like the coolest places in the world, where you're going around these markets of people were selling all this weird stuff, and there's a criminal damage shop. I don't know if you know that brand, but like to a 13-year-old, criminal damage, like very cool, super edgy stuff, like graffiti themed, all of this. And yeah, Camden's like full of loads of stuff like that. There's a place called Cyberdog as well, which is all rave gear themed stuff. So yeah, there's some pretty wild stuff out there. And yeah, I just remember going around all those shops as a kid, being like, this stuff is so cool. Like I'd never buy it because, too expensive for a, young teenager. But yeah, always found it very fascinating being able to go around those shops.
No, yeah, that's really fun. I remember doing similar things, like being a kid. Like, it's a common thing, unless you're somehow born into great affluence, most young people are just can't afford. So it's a lot of window shopping. It's a lot of looking at things. But like, I'm curious to know more about your experience being in the UK, being in that London kind of metro 40 minutes away area. Even before you started getting into the fashion aspect of things, what kind of things were you doing as a young kid? Did you have siblings? Did you have a particular interest in a certain subject? Did you gravitate towards a particular show? Those kind of things, I feel like, are so, they're so subliminally, they're underlined, but like they play a big role in your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was like skateboarding and video games, I think, were the two big hobbies for me. Yeah, I was definitely the kid that would get home from school and then I'd be straight out in the driveway with a skateboard trying to learn to ollie or something. I was never particularly good, and I'm still not, to be honest. I still skate occasionally, but yeah, I never really push myself. I guess once you get past kind of 20, the fear of injury starts kicking in a little bit more, and it makes you pretty hard to kind of progress past a certain point, I think. But yeah, that was definitely me, and it was kind of at a time as well where video gaming was not the hobby that it is now. I was, you know, I was the kid in my class that liked video games, or maybe there was like one or two others, which seems crazy now, but yeah, so that was definitely something that shaped my life a lot. In terms of, yeah, you mentioned like cartoons or media or stuff like that. I remember I used to watch a lot of MTV2 when I was a kid. So that's kind of a mix of, you've got the alternative music, like a lot of, yeah, rock and indie and grunge type stuff. And you also had a little bit of cartoons going on there as well. Like I remember watching Daria and stuff like that as a kid, the slightly, I guess, like subversive, more adult cartoons, the kind of like, yeah, proto Rick and Morty and all the, you know, Archer and the current wave of cartoons designed more for adults. But yeah, I used to really enjoy that stuff. And I remember watching Zane Lowe as well on MTV2 back in the day before he was mega famous. He used to just interview random celebrities and stuff in like this super low budget way, which I always thought was kind of fun. I used to watch a lot of SpongeBob as well. I feel like that's a classic kid show.
Cultural
Everyone loves
icon.
SpongeBob. Yeah,
I
for sure.
feel like you could, there could probably be, there maybe there already is a whole video essay about the how culturally impactful SpongeBob is, because obviously the show, like a lot of people watch the show, like that's one thing, but like there are so many memes, there are so many videos that derive from a reference from SpongeBob that some people probably don't even realize. That's a conversation for another day. But I feel like also, and like it's funny, in a lot of ways, I feel like we're very similar. And I think more than people really are paying attention to, right? I showed you a bit of my Lego set, or yeah, Lego set, Lego set earlier, and you have yours in the corner. And I was a huge video games buff as a kid too. Like I just remember with my friends and my dad, we played a ton of video games growing up. But I also have the sports background as well, which I feel like for whatever reason, like I have always played that element of my identity because it's a bit more sexier probably. Versus like, I was also the kid, and I don't know if you did this too, where like, I obsessed about like beating bad guys in video games. Like I wanted to get past the level. You know what I mean? Like that's what my dreams were about too. Not just, the sports thing. Obviously you have skating as well. But yeah, we'll kind of talk about that and explore that more. That's super cool. And MTV is iconic for a reason, right? I mean, they've done so much. So now, yeah, we could, okay, we have the a little bit more background now. This is great. Now start to talk about when you started to develop your interest in clothing and fashion, because I feel like there's a moment for everyone, right, where you start to pay attention to those things a little bit more.
I was definitely always, to some extent, interested in, you know, looking cool and having some kind of identity about myself. But I think for a lot of my life, I didn't really know anything about brands or anything like that, or streetwear or anything like that. It was literally just, I guess, same as anyone else. You know, you go to the various shops that are available to you, whether that be in kind of in London or anywhere else. And just picking stuff up from there that you kind of like the look of. I definitely remember shopping in Topman and stuff like that, and Uniqlo as well. Like once I got to maybe 15 or so, I was a big Uniqlo warrior for sure. And I think at that point, they maybe only had one shop in London. It wasn't like how it is now, where they're absolutely everywhere in the UK. So that was definitely a big moment, like getting to go to the Uniqlo store and like buying all these plain white t-shirts and being like, ah, oh, yes, like this is my jam. I love
Yes,
this stuff.
100%.
Yeah, a lot of people around me grew up kind of wearing those American prep brands like Hollister and Abercrombie and that kind of thing. And I was never really into logos or anything like that, or the idea of wearing stuff kind of for a label or for a brand. So Uniqlo, I guess, in some ways is like the opposite of that because all of their output is pretty much totally non-branded. So I definitely had a feeling like, yeah, I'm kind of doing my own thing because I'm wearing stuff different to other people, even though, you know, Uniqlo is not the craziest brand in the world, right? It's not some super high fashion thing. But I think it wasn't until I left university and got an actual job, like I say, like actual job in inverted commas. And then I feel like I had finally had a little bit of disposable income to kind of, all right, I can buy myself some cool stuff now. And that made me think, yeah, I want to have like a cool pair of trainers, like some cool sneakers or something that I can show off. And that would be just a cool thing that I own and I can wear all the time. And I remember buying a pair of Oreo 2.0 Flyknit racers. That was the first pair of cool shoes that I bought. And yeah, thinking at the time, like, damn, I've nailed it. Like, these are the best shoe ever. I'm feeling so hot, wearing them in the most awful fits you could possibly imagine. But of course, it never ends there, does it? You think, oh yeah, I'm gonna buy a pair of cool shoes, and then that's me done. Like, no, you're not done. That was only step one.
Yep. That's
And
the
here we
gateway.
are,
That's
however many years later.
the gateway drug. It starts with
Yeah.
one cool pair of shoes that you adore, and yeah, and it just kind of spirals or, you know, snowballs from there. You know, it's so interesting you bring up Uniqlo and like how you wanted to be a bit different from your peers. And I think a lot of people can resonate with that. I know I do, like in the sense of whatever period of time you grow up in, there's going to be this kind of like status quo for what is cool in that area, in your school, in your friend group, whatever the popular kids are wearing. You mentioned Hollister and some of the more brand-centric American brands. And then your deviation is, oh, I can do things more simplistically or minimalistically and still come up with a clean outfit. I'm curious to know, like, and I don't know if you have any, you know, history on this or if you know any background on this, but like Uniqlo, Hollister, Uniqlo is an Asian company. Hollister is American. Were there any brands that were specifically from the UK that you were paying attention to, that maybe you know, thought about as, you know, there's a bit more pride to wear this or not really. That wasn't really part of your thought process.
Yeah, not really. I think at that time in my life, I wasn't really thinking about things on that sort of cultural level. And it was probably almost the opposite. I think I probably felt a sort of allure of the idea of, oh, I'm getting something from Uniqlo. Like, it's a Japanese brand. Like, that's, you know, you can't get that anywhere, right? Like, that's a little bit different. And I'm sure a lot of the other kids at school kind of thought the same about Hollister and Abercrombie and those kinds of brands, thinking like, oh yeah, we're getting a slice of Americana with this stuff. Like, this isn't your standard British kid. Actually, no, I've just come up with something. So Jack Wills is probably that was like the thing. Again, like, never really a fan of that, but that was definitely a big brand at my school. And that's very much like English traditional kind of university outfitters type thing. So yeah, that's definitely something that people were held in quite a high regard, I think, because it did represent this kind of middle class British kind of well-to-do slight attitude.
Right. Very interesting. I always find I'm always so curious about those kind of things because it's a perspective that, you know, as much as you can try to research about, the time period that you grew up in, the kids that you experienced in your socioeconomic class with your school, like, I don't know, you'll be able to express it in a way that is so authentic and so others can know about it. So it's just, that's a, like a weird, like nerdy, quirky question. But 7 years ago, 7 years ago, you decided to start making, or you decided to upload on YouTube. What propelled that decision? Because I went back and I watched a couple of those early
Oh no.
videos.
I'm sorry, you had to put yourself through that. You got to suffer for the research. Yeah, some of those early videos were definitely not good. But you can't make the 50th good video until you make the first bad one. So That's just a thing you got to push through. Yeah, I guess it was kind of two things. It was partly, I was working a pretty regular job, I suppose. I was kind of feeling a little bit like I can do a bit more with my time. Like I'm doing the 9 to 5, and then I get home in the evening, and I'm feeling a bit like I don't just want to sit down and play video games all evening or whatever. Or like at the weekend, I'm not doing anything all weekend. Like I feel like I needed something to occupy my time that was productive or creative in some way. And I'd kind of hopped around between a few different things. So yeah, I guess thing number one was, yeah, wanted to have that creative outlet to use my time in a more productive way. And thing number two was I'd kind of gone between these various different creative pursuits or things that I wanted to do. I think there's a lot of people that kind of fit into this category where, they do a little bit of photography, they do a little bit of graphic design, they do a little bit of, I don't know, 3D work, all of these different things, but nothing really sticks. You have all these ideas, you learn enough of the program to just get a little bit of a taste of it, but you never really go the full way. And eventually I just thought to myself, right, I'm going to pick a thing and just do that and take it to its logical conclusion and just see where it goes. And I landed on, okay, I'm going to make YouTube reviews of stuff. And that's going to be the thing that I wanted to do. It was kind of between that, and I was kind of thinking about learning a coding language of some kind, and then maybe thinking, UI or graphic design or like game design, that kind of thing. That was the other, okay, what can I learn and really kind of focus on? So yeah, that was a bit of a weird split, I suppose. Maybe if I didn't do YouTube, I could be making some indie game right now or something. But I picked my lane, and yeah, I just really stuck to it, really went for it. And yeah, I said to myself, I'm gonna take it to the conclusion, and I guess I'm not really there yet, so I'm still going.
I love that. And it's interesting. A lot of people will probably resonate with that feeling of like, okay, I'm doing my 9 to 5, I'm in school, and I want to try to do something creative, right? And YouTube is like, a lot of people see YouTube as a very attractive option for whatever reason. They can talk about things that they care about. They can display their personality in ways that maybe they haven't been able to with people in real life and create community and those things. But for a lot of people, what happens is they make that first video or second video or third video, and the logical conclusion for them is, all right, I'm only getting 5 views per video. I'm gonna stop. What was it for you that, you have a catalog now, right? It's no longer just I'm gonna make a couple of videos, see how it goes, and be creative and move on to the next project. For you've built this entire journey on YouTube, and how has that played out in your mind?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of fortunate in that I didn't go through a period of making 50 videos that literally nobody watches. And I guess the reason for that was the first videos that I did were all sneaker related, and that's a much bigger audience. Sneakerheads, there's a far bigger number than fashion enthusiast type people. And that was right around the time I was quite into a couple of different online communities. So I started by, I think my very first video, I didn't even put it on YouTube. I just uploaded it directly to Facebook as like a group post and just put it out there as, hey guys, what do you think of this? A lot of people been asking questions. It was about a pair of Y3 Retro Boosts, actually, which I used to have there, but I've put them somewhere else. And yeah, I think I bought them on sale. They were half price or something. And because they were Y3, a lot of people didn't own them. I wanted to, yeah, just show people this is what they look like. This is what you can expect from a product that's a little bit more expensive than a regular Adidas shoe. So even from that, like I remember that first video, maybe it got 50 likes or something on the Facebook group, which in the grand scheme of things, not that massive, but it's enough that, oh wow, like I'm getting a little bit of feedback on this. There's one or two people that commented saying, hey, this was a cool video. Thanks for doing it, or whatever. So yeah, going from that and then the first couple of YouTube videos I did, maybe they got 50 views or something from me putting them in Facebook groups or something like that, saying, hey, I'm part of the community. This is something that I've been working on. I'm putting this content out. Would love to hear what you think of it. And I think, yeah, being part of a wider external community and then bringing your content into that, I think that's a nice way of getting that first step so that you're not just literally releasing your videos into absolute nothing. And that community can be any size. You know, that could just be if you've got a group of friends and they all have a similar interest to you. Just if you make your very first video, just send it to them, force them all to watch it, you know, and just say, like, tell me, like, give me your honest opinion what you think of this video. Do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? What can I change? And that just gives you a little bit of feedback, those few views. Maybe one of your friends gives it an actual like on YouTube, maybe one or two subscribe, and then you've just got that tiny little bit that you can work with. And I think just having that something that really helps
Yeah,
for sure.
for sure, for sure. And I think it's so true. I started in a similar way even before. It's funny, most people don't know. If you go to the beginning of my channel, I would say my channel truly started in 2020, like late 2020. But I had made two videos before 2020 in 2019, respect like earlier in 2019. And the first one, I was in college. I just got a pair of New Balances that I thought were really cool. They were the Emelian d'Or, I think 997s or something like that. And I just used iMovie, and I used like iMovie music, and it was like this like kind of like Japanese like doo 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 like music, and I didn't talk at all, and I made a video, and you know, when you go, like you said, when you go, when you decide, excuse me, to make videos on YouTube, like that feedback, that momentum that you initially start to build, like is massive. Whether and I think if people, sorry, this is a very disjointed thought, I'm sorry everyone. I think that if YouTube was formulaic in the sense that if you got one view on your first upload and then you got two views on your next and it kept doubling until you were at 1 million views, I think more people would do it. It's the uncertainty of one video gets 5 views, the next one gets one view, then the next one gets 20, right? And so like there's this like mental gymnastics that's going on. And I agree, like if you're in a community where like, you know, sneakers is a great one. I did the same. I had sneakers. That's what I originally started with. That's why I brought up what I did in 2019, because I started with sneakers too, like in footwear. And if you can enter into a community where there's people who care about these things, like Anne said, send it to your friend or whatever. Like it's a huge, huge plus for your confidence, and just it makes it more fun. Like it's just not as fun if like you're talking into the ether and nothing's coming back to you. So yeah, that's really interesting. Now, okay, how would you describe the difference between those videos early on and kind of like the different type of videos you've made through the years? Because I know that there's movement there, right?
Yeah, there's been a few different eras for sure. I definitely started as sneakerhead, starting off doing the weekly footwear review. I just pick up a pair of shoes, talk about them. I don't really know what I was talking about, I'll be honest, and you can tell I'm just clearly just bluffing my entire way through those videos. And I did a few videos as well because I thought, well, I'm a YouTuber now, so I guess I'd better do the types of videos that other people on YouTube do. So I've got one or two travel vlogs that I did. Doesn't really have very much to do with fashion at all. It was just a bit of a lifestyle thing. And I don't regret doing those videos, but I just feel like it was just not really relevant to what I was trying to do. I did a few videos talking about Supreme and Palace and brands like that that I personally wasn't really into. But again, I had this perception that, well, if you're going to be a fashion YouTuber, you have to talk about the big fashion brands. At the time, Supreme was the number one. So, you know, I made a video. Yeah, it is. It really is. But yeah, I did this video talking about my impressions of the things I thought were coolest from Supreme. And honestly, why on earth would you care about my opinion? I'm not a Supreme fanboy. I have no historical idea of what makes the brand interesting or the previous work that they've done in years before. So it's just some random guy looking at a sweatshirt being like, that's a green sweatshirt and it's pretty cool. I'll give that a 7 out of 10. And it really just, yeah, very little value in those kinds of videos. And then I started shifting to, okay, let's just put out some videos that's of stuff that I actually enjoy and I want to experience and I want to learn more about personally. And that was, I think, when things actually started kicking off in a proper way. I did a video that was comparing a Nike Lab ACG jacket to a Uniqlo one, and they were both this kind of technical looking jacket. I didn't really know anything about either of them, and again, kind of shows in the video, but I'm very upfront about that. And the whole video is predicated around this. Hey, this is my first experience with these kinds of jackets. Here's how I feel as someone that just spent 500 quid on this thing, which for me at the time was a crazy amount of money, and just giving my genuine impressions. And I think people responded well to that more authentic approach. And I just kind of stuck along that topic for quite a long time. And because there was no one else really doing the whole tech wear clothing type thing on YouTube, very quickly, I sort of just by default became the guy that does the tech wear clothing reviews or talks about the tech wear clothing brands. So for a long time, I was doing exactly that, talking about my impressions on different brands, introducing new brands that came into the space, different ways of styling all these kinds of pieces. And I think that worked for quite a long time. And I definitely built up certainly my own knowledge, certainly the quality of the videos, how comfortable I am presenting information, all of these things I think got better over time. And I feel like more recently now I'm in a little bit of a different era where the way that I see myself doing my content is rather than holding up jacket or whatever to the camera saying, look at the jacket, it's more, let's talk about fashion topics or fashion in a wider sense. And I'm going to use my own personal taste as a lens or as examples for some of the things I'm talking about. So if you really love tech wear, you've been following me for however many years, you're still getting that taste of the stuff that I like and the things that I think are cool, but you're also learning or thinking about fashion on a wider scale. And for those people that are not interested in my own personal style, the examples are still relevant, they still make sense, but the content is actually a lot more interesting and relevant for those people as well.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it makes a ton of sense to move the content and the channel in that way. Especially, I mean, everything, nothing stays the same. You mentioned how Supreme, you felt like you had to make a Supreme video. I grew up in the era and watching all these damn Supreme videos, especially, at its peak with Louis Vuitton and those collaborations that it had. I was like, oh, like the Supreme is so amazing, like as a young kid. And that's kind of the way it is. I think now and it's shifted, right? I think more people want to have that broader conversation about things because, as cool as Supreme was, when it became uncool, it became really uncool. And now it's moving back into its graces, just like everything does, right? But I think what you said is really important for like a lot of beginning creatives or just someone who wants to make more of an impact is what it seems like is you had this very narrow focus. I mean, and it changed over time, but even still, like reviewing particular products, saying this versus this is a very specific type of video, right? And you might be thinking, like, if you're listening, I could never do that because no one would care about my opinion. But, if you listen to Anne's story, like, it's really interesting because I think that there's almost more value in some way hearing the opinion of a newcomer, of someone who doesn't really know, because they're just gonna give you what they think about it from without pedigree, right? They're gonna give you their opinion of something without the pedigree of maybe the product or the brand or whatever it may be. So I think that's really fascinating as well. And my videos, I do the same kind of thing. I try to talk about things a lot of times in a broader sense, whether it be a video essay format or just like talking about trends in general or other things. And I think it's enjoyable for me right now, and it seems like it's enjoyable for you right now as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're doing something very interesting with the way that, especially with some of the recent videos talking about literature and stuff, you've done, I think you've referenced Amatora in maybe two videos now. And I think the way that you approach that topic is really interesting because you're not just saying, I read this book, here's my review on this book, or here's my summary of this book. Your knowledge that you gained from that book and your experience with that is a jumping off point for you to talk about something that's personally relevant to you. So people come away from that video with some kind of understanding of what the book is like. And I keep looking over there because I've literally got it sitting there. People come away with a little bit of an understanding of, okay, this is what this book is like. Maybe they hear a story or two from that book. It makes them want to learn a little bit more about it, but also they they actually gain your own perspective as well. And I think, yeah, that is a really good format for a video and a really interesting one. And I would definitely like to do stuff like that myself a little bit more often, of taking those pieces of material, and it doesn't have to be a book. The last video that I did was on essentially a critical essay, but I've done it on like online articles as well, and just done, this is this person's opinion in an online article. Let's talk about this opinion and how that could apply to you. And then those things don't even have to be about fashion directly, but you can apply those things to fashion, and it's that application that gives something its personal touch. And it's that application that is why someone would want to watch your video and not just read the article on the subject.
100%, 100%, and that's it. That's literally the unlock for what seems like to be that there is no logical end because there's so many damn topics.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing this forever. I'm stuck here now.
You made a decision to trap yourself within the YouTube landscape. No, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you, because I saw you from the lens of techwear initially, and I think that's still a huge part of your background. We talked about how Supreme was really prevalent, I would say probably 20 teens, mid 2010s, whatever it may be. What is the difference? Because right now we're in a moment of Gorpcore and this idea of Gorpcore, right? And I wanted to ask this question. When you look at Gorpcore, is there a difference in your eyes from techwear, or like the movement that is Gorpcore, how are you viewing it, right?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting topic. I think people see the two as almost diametrically opposed, in that, well, tech wear, that's your futuristic urban stuff, and Gorpcore is your backwards looking rural stuff, and therefore the two could not be more different. But I don't know, I definitely don't agree with that way of viewing things. And I think I try not to think at all in terms of this individual item of clothing is tech wear or Gorpcore or whatever, because things are so much more fluid than those kind of categories would imply. And I think there are plenty of things that I own where, worn in a tech wear context, yeah, they look great in that kind of outfit, but then you could wear exactly the same thing in the Gorpcore context, and guess what? It works fine there too. And I think there's so much crossover in terms of the way that that clothing is actually constructed. Like, so many performance elements and technical aspects are exactly the same between those two things. If you have a pair of pants which are lightweight and breathable, and they're articulated in such a way that makes them very easy to run or walk or anything like that in, well, guess what? That functionality is equally appropriate whether you're hiking on the trails or whether you're doing some urban commuting, or, running from the cyber police or whatever. Like, those two things, yeah, they both work fine. So I feel like there's a single point of reference almost that both of those two styles can be derived from. And I think for that reason, if you're a fan of one, you definitely shouldn't be writing off the other, and
Right,
vice versa.
right, right. That makes a lot of sense. The way I'm thinking about it too, and like based off of what you're saying is, like food, like pizza, right? If you have a slice of pizza that has pepperoni, and jalapenos on it, and then you have another slice that has ham and pineapples, right? There are some people who are going to vehemently hate the pineapple ham pizza. But you should still recognize it as pizza, right? It's in the same categorical level of food as the pepperoni jalapeno slice. And that's kind of like the way I'm thinking about it with Gorpcore and Techwear. It's almost more of a lens or marketing or wherever the term came from in terms of its cultural relevance now, Gorpcore. It's almost like a lens kind of viewpoint or a marketing viewpoint. Because like you said, you can there is crossover between pieces, between styles, and between looks. And so it's just really interesting how culture moves and how language moves as well. Because I mean, in 2017, no one was talking about Gorpcore. In fact, more people were talking about techwear, but in the last 2.5 years, you know, the term GorpCore is skyrocketed exponentially, right? So it's just fascinating. Like, it's just it's just fascinating.
Something else I think is interesting around the whole GorpCore sort of thing is the people that are most authentically wearing all of that stuff aren't even thinking about it in terms of whether it's GorpCore or not. They're just out there on the trails or camping doing their own thing, wearing the stuff that appeals most to them and the stuff that is right for that situation. And there are probably loads of things that those people are wearing where if you asked a fashion guy, they'd be like, oh no, that's not GorpCore. Like that brand, no, that's not GorpCore. You don't want to be wearing that. You need the Arc'teryx and all of this stuff. There's so much other stuff out there which is going to be as good or even better. And yeah, maybe it just has a bit of a different look to it. But yeah, it's still kind of just as valid. I think there's a lot of places that people can get inspiration from. If your only perception of GorpCore is from people wearing it like in their rooms or in an urban scenario, there's only so far you can take inspiration there. I think to some extent you've got to go out there and find some people that are actually putting that stuff through its paces, and then that will give you a good idea of, okay, here's the real cool stuff, here's the really important stuff, here's what actually matters in that space. And I'm not necessarily suggesting that, oh, everyone should go out and just buy this pure performance stuff and forget about looking cool, because obviously it's not about that. But there's a healthy balance to be found there for sure. And I think it's definitely a good thing to be taking inspiration, not just from fashion sources, but from enthusiast sources and the people who are actually using clothing in the context that it's meant to be used.
100%. And I think you hit it right, the nail right on its head. That's another thing I was going to bring up is I think that GorpCore is still a I cannot think of the words today, honestly. But GorpCore is a reflection of kind of the current state of the memification, the TikTokification of things, right? When you said that you shouldn't only get the reference from a kid, you know, in his home. And I thought about the kids on TikTok who literally would go in the shower with an Arc'teryx beta and let the water drip over their head. Like, and that probably sold 10,000 Arc'teryx beta LTs off of the memification of a video idea, right? So I think that that plays a role as well. I don't need to reiterate what you said. You said it really well. What about some other YouTubers that have inspired you? Also, kind of side question. Are you on TikTok? Do you watch TikToks, or is that a part of your social media consumption?
I feel like there's definitely a perception of people that are YouTube fashion content creators or maybe Instagram or whatever. They're almost like the old guard and they're here to like hate on TikTok wherever possible, like down with the new platforms. It's the case with absolutely everything, right? Like all the traditional bloggers and journalists and stuff, they would have been saying down with Instagram, we hate it, it's we hate this stuff. So yeah, I think there's a real it would be very easy to do that. But no, I am very much on the platform. I do make stuff. I watch stuff on there as well. And I'm not saying that to say the opposite either. I don't necessarily think that, oh yeah, TikTok is amazing. Like everyone needs to be on it. It's the best stuff. I think there's a lot of problems with the platform and there's dangers of getting too far down that rabbit hole. And that's definitely stuff that in recent videos I've kind of talked explicitly about. So I definitely think there are valid criticisms to be made. But at the same time, I think I try and view anything that's new or different through the lens of let's not assume that it's bad. Let's just assume that it's going to be a change. Let's try and look at it as neutrally as possible. And then you'll probably find that there are some good things in there as well as the bad things. I think for me, the good things are, in terms of the sheer amount of content and the things that you can be exposed to, I feel personally like what I found out about some kind of interesting brands or things like that that I probably wouldn't have seen if I was just on Instagram or if I was just on blogs or whatever, because you can see so much so quickly. And yeah, a lot of stuff is maybe not very good. You have to back that up with some of your own thoughts or research as well, especially when things are that short form video content. It's very difficult to get the sense of what brands are really legitimate and which ones aren't. You know, there's a reason that you've got, I mean, I don't want to hate name drop brands, but it's why you've got people like Jaded London, for example, that have come up so quickly making products that are, you know, it's really fast fashion with a different name. It's stuff which is directly copied from somewhere else. They will spot a TikTok trend. They will very quickly get a product in to represent that. Some of those things, to my understanding, are basically directly from AliExpress or Taobao or whatever, and then they put their own labels on it and stuff like that. That might not be true. I'm just repeating information that I've seen
We
elsewhere,
cannot
so apologies.
confirm nor deny.
Yeah, my lawyers have told me to say that that's not 100% true. So yeah, you've got to be careful because there are brands like that that are out there. There are brands that exist purely to copy the trends put in place by others. So I think you have to look quite hard for like, is this the source of this particular thing? Is this the authentic thing? Is this the real deal? Or is this just another kind of 2 week trend cycle consumer product? You're going to buy it and then you're going to throw it away again. That's something that, yeah, I think you have to be more conscious of than ever because of that kind of platform. But yeah,
Yeah, I agree.
it's one of those
I
things.
think you hit it right on its head again, and I love your perspective on, you know, you have a sense of like thinking about it from a neutral standpoint and being self-aware about the things that are bad and the things that are good. To me, like that is like one of my philosophies for life. And with TikTok, there are obviously things that are, you know, bad, and there are obviously things that you can derive meaning and value and good things can come from it, right? And so I think looking forward, more people are going to recognize that it's only going to become more like you're only going to have to be more self-aware. You're going to have more critical thinking. You're going to have to be able to decipher right from wrong because AI and all the things that come along with the improvements of technology and the improvements of social media. I don't know why I can't talk, but all those kind of things are going to continue to manifest in the future, right? And so, yeah, that's a really good perspective. What about YouTube? Are there YouTubers that you kind of look to that, you know, you derive inspiration from or just like to watch in general?
For a lot of my YouTube time, I almost consciously avoided anything fashion related. I sort of had this perception that, well, if I watch other fashion creators, then maybe my view will be sort of tainted by the content that I'm watching, and then the stuff that I'm doing won't be completely original, or I'll end up, yeah, just kind of being derivative and not really myself, not having my own voice. And that made me, yeah, really shy away from other fashion content. I think I maybe had this perception as well of thinking of anything like that sort of as competition. This idea that, well, if someone's watching this other person, then that means that they're not watching me. They could be watching my video. So like, I don't want to be over there like talking to all these other people. But I've definitely changed my perspective on both of those things in that I think actually, the way that stuff like that works, and this I think is a good thing, a good way of thinking about things if you are also in the business of making content, is if you make fashion content, for example, people do not have a 10-minute window per week that they think, I'm going to consume some fashion content now in this 10 minutes. Which fashion content person should I watch? I'll watch this guy because he's making the best videos right now. It doesn't really work like that. If there's five people that are all making really great content, they're going to end up watching all of that content and they're going to end up further down the rabbit hole and they're going to be more evangelized to fashion content generally. So it's actually a good thing to have several people that are in a similar space making similar videos because then you've got those viewers, they've got enough, trust me, they've got enough time to watch like 3 10-minute videos per week, for example, from different creators. And that's going to give them a better perspective on things. And it's going to allow all of those people to grow and come up together. So it's definitely worth supporting other people in a similar space because, yeah, I just think it's really helpful. And in terms of, yeah, watching other content now, yeah, I try and watch a lot more fashion content than I did before. Just because, yeah, I like hearing other people's perspectives. I like learning things that I otherwise wouldn't have learned. And I think there's some really good channels out there that do some really good stuff. I mean, that's part of the reason that I reached out to you. You know, before we hit the record button on this, I was saying that, yeah, your sort of positive attitude to a lot of this stuff, I think how willing you are to look at the kind of what's behind brands and the stories behind them and actually talking to the creators and stuff like that, I think that's really positive and a good thing. And I like the way that you mix that in with even when you're doing these pickup type videos, you're also using that as an opportunity to say, yeah, I've got this product, but now let's go over to the guy that made all this stuff and then we can hear a little bit more about it. And then those things cease to just be products anymore. They're a little bit more than that. And I think that kind of content is super valuable. And I think it's a good thing to take inspiration from others and use that to inform and make your own content better. And I've definitely picked up things that I think are interesting from other fashion creators or people outside of that space. They'll just be like a tiny little thing where I watch in a video and maybe they'll use a sound effect in a particular place. And I'll be like, oh, that's a smart thing that they did there. Like, I can put my own take on that. I can do something like that in my own way. And if you're gathering those things up from loads of different sources, then you put that all together into your own content. It doesn't make it any less yours because you're the person that's making all of those conscious decisions to use or to not use different things. You're taking inspiration from different sources. That's all that anyone's doing at the end of the day. But if you're combining those things in a creative way, yeah, you still have your own identity and your own voice. So yeah, I try now to be inspired by different people and to watch different people's content.
Yeah, I love that. And you're kind of talking about this idea of scarcity versus abundance too, in the very beginning of kind of your explanation, in which, you know, if you are a creator, the audience, you're like you said, doesn't just watch one content creator, doesn't watch one fashion YouTuber. They watch a whole range of different people. You know, you'll have the occasional person that will comment and say, "Oh man, and like this is my favorite channel. I only watch this guy," which is a really nice compliment, and maybe that can get into the psyche of a particular creator. But in reality, most people are watching a ton of things. If you go on YouTube, you look at the analytics, it'll say your audience is watching these other channels and these other videos, right? So you know who the other videos that they're watching. You understand that, right? And so I think it's also like really beautiful how you said to get inspiration from these people. YouTube and most things in life are a conversation, right? It's not set in stone. If I say something or if you say something, it's just an opinion, right? Unless we're pulling from a factual historical thing. And even if we are doing that, we can still have a different opinion about that same topic, right? And that's the kind of the cool thing about YouTube. So I like the fact that you're kind of evolving in the sense of like, okay, I'm gonna look at some other creators and see where I can pull a couple things there, or you know, this is a good idea to talk about this, or you know, my audience would care about this. It's important to always be thinking like that, and not worry about like, oh, like I'm being too much like Drew or I'm being too much like whoever, right? So yeah, that's cool. That's a cool perspective. Now, we're kind of getting towards the end of the pod, and I want to talk a little bit more about your life outside of YouTube, some of the things that we kind of hinted at before. But I want to ask you, I mentioned at the very intro of this episode, the live intro, that you know you're at over 150,000 subscribers. It's no small feat. It's in fact incredibly difficult. I was looking at the number of channels with 100,000 subscribers. I think it's at 300,000, like that's the total number, and that might seem like a lot, but there are millions of YouTube channels, so the number is actually pretty staggeringly impressive. For there might be someone who, you know, who's listening to this, and who's like, I've always wanted to be like This Is Antoine or like Drew. What are the key moments in your journey that you would say that have stood out to you, in achieving 150,000 plus subscribers?
I remember having one moment that came very, very early, and it's kind of almost a private thing rather than a public thing. But I remember back in the early days of me making tech wear clothing content, before I really had much understanding of it, to be honest, when it was very much my first experience. I remember a guy messaging me, and we had quite a detailed conversation. And I feel like that was a bit of a tipping point for me, because he said a lot of things about, look, you and I maybe had 500 subscribers at this point. He was like, look, you're kind of at a point right now where you could be the guy for this stuff, but you have to do it properly. Like, this isn't a joke. This isn't a kind of game. He was quite a kind of serious character, I suppose. He was saying, like, look, like all of these things, like you have to actually take the time to learn what you're talking about, because like it or not, you're potentially going to be an authority figure on this subject and people are going to listen to you. So you have to know what you're talking about. You have to put the time in to gain some understanding, gain some perspective. You can't just put things out where you talk conjecture, you make stuff up, you say things that, can't be proven either way. You put out an uneducated opinion. And I think at that time, there were a couple of people in that real enthusiast hardcore community that were very quick to dismiss anything that I did because I was an outsider coming in. I'm just learning about this stuff. It's my first experience. So I was kind of on an edge. Like, someone like that could have said to me, you're not welcome here. You shouldn't be doing this stuff. Find something else and stick to that instead. And maybe that would have made me think, okay, maybe I will go back to doing sneakers or something else and build up some knowledge there. But I think he was quite genuine. And I think his advice was quite valuable. So I think that was definitely one moment for me. I think having that first video on that topic actually do well, and for people to comment and say, like, I learned something from this video, like I came away with stuff that I didn't have before, I think that was definitely quite a sort of powerful moment as well, thinking like, oh, I actually have the ability to tell people things that they find interesting. Like, this is cool. That's yeah, that was definitely a good point as well. I think in terms of overall highlights, being able to interview Errolson Hugh, who's the founder of Acronym, that was definitely a very big prestigious moment for me. Like, the fact that he even gave me the time of day to like sit down and talk to me was pretty mad for sure. So yeah, that was definitely a big one.
Cool. I love that. And imagine that commenter, like, or was it an email or a commenter? Imagine that person who had reached out. Like, that is so unbelievable to me, because, like, especially early on, you read all your comments, you read all your messages that come in your inbox, and like that individual had an impact on you to allow you to straighten up and then pursue the kind of content that you wanted to make. Like, that is just that's unbelievable. Obviously, you put the work in and you've had a ton of success in doing so, but it just goes to show, like, if just be a good person. If you care about something, then allow people to know you care about it, and you never know what the product of w what it will be, right? Like, this is Antoine. The channel has grown from that moment in a positive direction because, this person decided to let their opinion, as genuine and as it could be known, and that's really cool. That's really special. Yeah, let's kind of transition, and let's start talking a little bit more about your personal life before we round out the end of the episode. I know that you're a big video games anime dude. On your channel or on your Instagram, it says outfits for anime villains, clothes for anime villains, excuse me. Can you talk to us a little bit about that side of you? Like, do you have a favorite anime that you're watching right now, or what?
I think I have that on my bio because that was what someone commented on a picture of mine, like super early, maybe like 5+ years ago. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of funny. Like, I'm just going to use that. And I just never changed it. I'm actually not watching anything at the moment. The last thing that I watched was Evangelion for the second time. I rewatched it. In terms of anime villains, I don't know. I've never really thought about it that hard. I guess Dio in JoJo's is a pretty cool, because he's just so evil. He is so classically evil. There is no redeeming good quality about him. He's not some tortured soul. He's not like divided. Oh, should I do the right thing or the wrong thing? No, he's just straight
He's
up
just
evil,
evil.
100%.
Yeah.
And he loves being evil. He relishes every second of being evil. So that's kind of good. And then I guess on the opposite side of that, you've got someone like Is it Tetsuo or Kanada who's the kind of villain in Akira?
Tetsuo.
I can't. Yeah, Tetsuo. He's kind of like the opposite almost, because he's kind of a victim of circumstance almost, and a victim like of the system, and not an inherently evil character at all, and yet is very much the antagonist of that with this kind of corrupting force. So that's kind of an interesting one as well. Who else have we got? I'm just trying to think of
I need to
animes that
watch
I've watched.
Evangelion. I bought the books because I'm a big manga reader. But I think that most people say that the anime is actually better because of just the animation, visual production is like off the charts and the storytelling is awesome in that format. So, I'm gonna read it first and then I'll watch it, but I'll let you know. I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. I've never really read any manga. So what's your recommendation as someone that's coming in for the first time? What should I be picking up?
If you enjoy Akira and Neon Genesis, I would say that I would give something like Hunter X Hunter a read. It's pretty long though. That's the only problem with mangas is that they kind of get to be very long, expensive kind of purchases. Let me. I'm looking at my shelf right now.
Yeah, how much shelf space in inches do I need to make for some of these series?
You need to make a ton, probably 90 inches.
Oh man.
Damn, a lot.
I'm gonna have to buy a new shelf.
I don't know. I'll tell you the ones that I've enjoyed the most. I love Death Note. Reading it, Death Note has been really fun to read. A really funny one that I discovered 2021 is called Prison School. Hilarious, a bit on the edgier side, but it's hilarious. Fooly Cooly is another one that I read that it's like a short, it's just one book and it's pretty cool. Another one that's like that is called The God's Lie, which is interesting. And then like a lot of the mangas that like I actually collect because you can read these things online too if you just want to. But I collect like the ones that I watched as a kid, like Naruto, Dragon Ball. Those two are pretty popular for me. Yeah, those are kind
Have
of.
you seen that Naruto book where it's like a single volume that has everything in?
No, I haven't seen that one.
It's absolutely insane. It's like several
It's
feet
just
tall. It's like unreadable.
a thick Bible of Naruto.
It's literally unreadable because it's so tall, but
I
like
need to
I'm
look
so glad that it exists. It's so funny. I
that
think it's Naruto. It's either Naruto or Dragon Ball or maybe One Piece,
It could be
actually.
One
Could be
Piece
One
because One
Piece.
Piece is insanely big. But yeah, it could be Naruto too. I don't have the full thing, to be honest, when it comes to Naruto, because it just costs so much. Like I don't know, I don't have space, that kind of thing too. But yeah, I enjoy my mangas here and there. I'm trying to get better and read more, but we're working with what we got. What about Nintendo stuff? Because I've seen even like scrolling back on your Instagram, you were on Animal Crossing and things like that. What are some of the Nintendo games you play? Also, that was a moment too. Like during the pandemic, that was a moment.
Yeah, big time. Animal Crossing got me through 2020 a big
Same.
way. I think a lot of people were in that camp. I remember talking to people, online and stuff, with like absolutely no idea that they were into gaming at all. And I just mentioned like, oh, I'm playing Animal Crossing, by the way. And they were like, yeah, I'm literally playing it right now as we're having this conversation. I'm like, nice, that's so good. Yeah, it's that was such a great, well, in a lot of ways, not a very good time, but from that specific aspect, its ability to kind of culturally unite people, I feel like everyone had something in common with the fact that they were all playing Animal Crossing
Their
and all having the
islands.
same experience. That was so good. Yeah, that was great. But yeah, aside from Animal Crossing, yeah, I have played Nintendo games since I was literally 3 years old. Super Mario Kart was the first game that I ever
Are
played.
you any good?
I came second in a tournament for Mario Kart 8, and I won a Nintendo eShop voucher.
Damn. Okay. Yeah.
So there
Definitely
you
good. You're
go.
definitely valid.
That's like the peak of my eSports career. Was
Hey,
£15 on the Nintendo
follow it to its logical
eShop.
end.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, apart from that, Donkey Kong Country 3 is for me one of the greats, which is an unpopular opinion because a lot of people think that's the worst of the three.
Yeah, I wouldn't
But
expect you to say
for
that.
me, that's my favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an unusual one for sure. Mario Odyssey, more recently, I thought was super good. Like, really, really enjoyed that. Smash Bros.
Yep.
Games, like, played so much Melee when I was a kid, and Ultimate more recently. There are some videos online somewhere of me casting Ultimate tournaments.
That's what's
That's
up.
yeah, another unknown side. I also think Mario 64 is so good and is aged surprisingly well. Like, I find it almost unbelievable that that team and a relatively small team came out of the gate with basically no understanding of how to make a game in three dimensions and how to translate a two-dimensional platformer into three dimensions and did it that well. It's honestly like incredible to me because, yeah, it's just so different to anything that came before. And it basically set the tone for every single platforming game that's come out in the following however many, like 20 plus
100%.
years. It's
And people are
crazy.
still doing, like, people are still discovering new ways to traverse that world. Like, I still see videos that pop up in my, I'm like, how is this game still being played in 2023? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Someone will make a 2 hour long video about, oh yeah, we've just discovered this new way of, like, if you long jump backwards into a wall for like 10 hours
Yes.
straight, then you can get to this like other place.
Yes,
So crazy. I love watching that stuff.
exactly. No, exactly. So big Mario fan, big Mario fan. That's what's up. My girlfriend and I we're playing together 3D Land Bowser's Fury.
Yeah, that was great. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun right now. She's not the biggest, like, she likes games. In fact, we're even I'm trying to get her more into gaming because it's like fun to have a partner who can do it. Not too much. But a little bit more. And we've been playing that. We've been playing like Among Us on the mobile device, which is hilarious. Which is also like another moment, I feel like. But yeah, gaming is a great escape, a great way to relax, honestly. It's just that's like one of the ways I relax when I'm not constantly thinking about videos.
I've been playing Deep Rock Galactic recently. Me and my girlfriend play that with some of my friends. I would definitely recommend giving that a
Deep
go.
Rock
It's
Galactic.
kind of a it's a PC game. It's a little bit like Left 4 Dead. It's that kind of vibe in that you got four people, you go down onto a planet and you'll have objectives like mining certain minerals, like killing special enemies, doing this other kind of stuff, and it's all like dwarf and mining themed, but it's kind of like industrial as well. And just the gameplay is super fun, really satisfying to play. You can make it super easy if you want, you can make it super hard. It's got loads of charm and personality. The devs are super involved with the
I
community.
love that.
Everyone is like really passionate about the game and really positive. Like, it's so good. And for an indie game, it's just kind of, yeah, I feel like it's grown super organically and super well. And yeah, like I first started playing that game in like 2018 or something. And we played it a little bit then. It was in early access, no one really knew about it. But since then, like, it's massively blown up, huge community. Yeah, loads of people play it. It's super fun. I would definitely
Cool.
recommend
I
giving that a
just
go.
sent her a text about it, so I'll definitely check it out. I always love new games because anytime I play a game with my girl, like, it's always just laughter because it's like she has like a sense of what to do in games and things like that, but then there's not, and then like she does something that's like completely unorthodox to what I would anticipate happening, and it's just I always start cracking up. So yeah, gaming is a lot of fun in that respect, for sure, for sure, for sure.
The thing that I find when you're having those gaming experiences with a non-gamer where you kind of forget about is, to me, for example, if I play an FPS game and I have to think, I'm going to look around this corner and move around and shoot, I just translate that directly from my thought into doing it.
Yes.
But when you're a non-gamer, you think, I want to do this particular movement. And to do that, this finger needs to press W and this one needs to press D. And my right hand needs to move the mouse around like this. And they have to do that translation process into,
100%.
how do I execute my actions in this video game? And I think that's people, that's something that gamers totally forget about
Yes.
because it just becomes muscle memory. It's just totally unconscious. And yeah, that's definitely something worth remembering
Yeah.
when people are like not getting things, that there's this extra brain process that has to happen.
100%, 100%. Basically, what you're saying is that gamers are just smarter and better, and that, the world
Yeah, we're
needs
built
to
different.
exactly. The world needs to recognize that this, like, the fact that we can do what we do second nature. Come on. Come on now. He just explained it. It's
Yeah,
not as easy as it
it's
seems.
true. We're the next stage in human
In human
evolution.
evolution.
Yeah.
No, it's so true. It's so true. I tried to show my girlfriend Breath of the Wild. Like, and she was like, "Where do I go? How do I do everything?" And it was just a fun kind of thought experiment. And I know there's been other videos about that kind of thing too, where people kind of show their partners or non-gamers like games. And yeah, you hit it right on its head. Before we conclude, I have two more questions I want to ask you. I have to talk about Lego because I know you're a
Of
big
course.
Lego buff yourself. I've been getting into it much more, and it's a part of my like channel decor at this point. And for those who care about it, they care, and for those who don't care, they don't care. Sorry, if you're not a video game Lego person and you're still listening to the pod right now, salute to you, because I
Yeah.
don't know if I could do it if it was like Barbie or something. I don't even know.
Yeah, this is pure torture if you're not interested in that
You're
stuff.
probably like, oh, Drew, like, come on now.
Yeah.
Have you been building Lego for a long time, or have you been into it for a while? Because I know that, like, I did it as a kid, and like that's my introduction. For most people, that's their introduction. But I didn't know that I know there's this whole world of ecosystem of people who either create their own builds or like take something like the Millennium Falcon, which is like 8,000 pieces, and build that. Like, yeah, what's that journey?
I was kind of exactly the same. That was my toy of choice when I was a kid. I always liked building stuff, creative play, that kind of thing. And yeah, Lego is kind of the pinnacle of that, I suppose. So yeah, I had a massive bin of random Lego when I was a kid. I'd make all kinds of weird stuff. I'd have models as well. I never had anything that was, the absolute ultimate, like biggest set you could get.
Yeah,
But
same.
I had loads of Lego Star Wars stuff. I had some cool stuff. And then yeah, I kind of put that stuff away. Maybe once you get to teenage age and
It's definitely not
anything that
cool
feels like
anymore.
a kid's toy,
Yeah.
yeah, it's like you want to avoid that at all costs. Like you're trying to pick up girls or whatever. Like you've got to have everything as cool as possible. And yeah, it's maybe been in the last, probably around the time that I started making YouTube videos, to be honest, maybe the last like 5 or 6 years, where I kind of, and I think that was also the time where Lego started consciously making these sets where they're like, these aren't for kids. If you're a kid, don't buy it. This one is for adults.
Right.
And the Lego architecture stuff was that for me, because I have kind of a casual interest in architecture as well. Like I like buildings and stuff like that.
Right.
And they were making these sets that are based on famous landmarks and different architectural buildings and stuff like that. So I was kind of collecting those, and then it's expanded a little bit since then. So yeah, I've bought a couple of the big Lego Star Wars things. So I've got the Millennium Falcon, I've got the Star Destroyer, and
Ooh.
much much to my girlfriend's disappointment, I will probably be buying the Razor Crest as well, the UCS, at some
She
point.
just doesn't get it. She just
She
doesn't get
doesn't.
it. My girlfriend is the same
She's
way.
very understanding. She's as understanding as she possibly can be, considering there are like these enormous bits of plastic hanging around the house now.
That's
Like you
hilarious.
can't quite see it, but on this side of my desk, I've got three massive buildings that are like stuck next to each
I
other.
can
There's
imagine.
more. They're in basically every room of the house at this point, like tucked away in different corners. So yeah, it's gotten pretty bad. But I think for me, there's a little bit of element of nostalgia. I'm not a particularly nostalgic person in general. I like thinking about the next thing, like the new stuff, rather than kind of reclaiming my childhood or whatever. But there's definitely a little bit of that for me. But I think the thing that I find really interesting is when I'm putting something together, there's this sense that I'm following the creative process of somebody else, and I really like looking at how those designers have solved a particular problem of how do you make these pieces look like this particular thing? How do you put these staircases in a certain way? And the way that they come up with combining these different things and interlocking them,
It's
and also
amazing.
making the instructions like really clear and easy to follow. That in itself is an insane skill. So I'm almost like going through all of these models, being like, wow, this is so cool that they managed to do that. So there's that side of it for sure. I like the finished products as well. I think some of them just look fantastic. They make great display pieces.
Yep.
Yeah, just pretty much everything about them, I think, is
Yeah.
something that I like. And just when you're building stuff as well, there's that mindfulness aspect as well, which I think Lego are trying to push a bit more as well. This idea that, yeah, if you're an adult, just take some time out of your day,
Yep.
put the phone down,
Yep.
and just have this kind of experience where you're just like focusing on just like doing this little puzzle almost. I think that's quite nice as well.
Yes.
Especially you probably feel the same way, where it feels like every
100%.
second of the day you're thinking about the content, thinking about the DMs, thinking about all of this other stuff, and it's very difficult to shake those feelings away and shake that stuff that you need to do. And something like that, where you can just kind of focus on it, I think is a very, very helpful thing and a very positive thing.
100%. That's exactly why I've gotten into it, right? And that's exactly why I read mangas versus sometimes watching animes, is that in my family with my girlfriend, like, we talk about this all the time. Like, so much of our livelihood is screen. Is screen, being on a screen, looking at a screen, talking through a screen. And there's a bit of not nostalgia, but like a bit of like, is this okay? Like we're kind of going through a social experiment in that way, right? Like, we live in a world where everything is behind a screen. But when we grew up, there were, maybe because we were kids, but when we grew up, there were points in our lives where the best moments, they'd never involved a screen. But now every moment is, if it's someone's birthday, you take a picture. If there's something that's happening, it's online, so you have to view it through a screen. And like, I just enjoyed being able to maybe play some music, pull out a Lego set, and build. And like you said, the instructions, the way that they make it so simple and just clean, it's a beautiful. It's just like you're building something, like you're bringing something into existence that wasn't there before. Like, that's like a very dramatic way to talk about it. But it's true, and like, it's just so much fun in the process. So it's if you ever have a curiosity. You started with the architecture ones. I like Star Wars. I've always liked Star Wars, so I started with like Star Wars ones. But I think like there's plenty of different. There's cars. There's dinosaurs. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Give it a look.
Yeah, for sure. And there's so many different things which are not really play sets, they're more display pieces. So yeah, if you don't like the idea of having things that look like kids' toys around, which is fair enough, there are a lot of things which definitely don't look kiddie to me, at
100%,
least. So
100%. I built a TIE fighter, as you guys have probably seen in the videos if you've watched. And this is a playset because like there are literally shooters that shoot. I just showed and I just shot one in the actual podcast video. But for me, I just display everything, boy. Like, I just lost that. I don't even know where that went. I don't know why I did
It's
that.
hard not to play with those things, but yeah, you shoot them once and then that's it,
It's
they're gone
over.
forever. So I hope you enjoyed that moment that you had there, because you're never going to do that again.
Yeah. Last question, man. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. And I know it's getting pretty late there. Let's get you to bed. You've been a fantastic guest, true professional, and just like I love your opinions about a lot of these things, and hearing your perspective has been awesome. What is one piece of advice you would give to yourself 7 years ago, starting out on YouTube?
Oh, you're giving me a tough question
That
here.
is a tough one. I don't even know how I would answer that question. I'm glad I'm not answering it.
I think to an extent, there's not necessarily anything that I regret doing, even though I said earlier about, there are things that I thought were really cringe or didn't really fit what I was doing. I think you need to make those mistakes to understand what doesn't work or what you shouldn't do. So you might as well explore that stuff, and you might as well get it wrong, because you kind of have to get it wrong to start getting it right. So yeah, even though I don't like watching those videos now, I'm still kind of glad that they're around and they exist in some kind of way. But in terms of actually giving myself advice, I think in a more general sense, definitely don't be scared to try something new And you don't have to feel like you just need to churn things out for the sake of it, just because it's similar to what you've done before. If you think something else will be fun or interesting to do, then just do it, because the worst that can happen is that people don't really respond to it that well. And then fine, now you know people don't like that. Try something else again. But if you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, there will be a point that you'll hit and then you won't go past that point. Or even worse, people will get sick of seeing the same kind of thing over and over again. Like if you only cover tech wear clothing, for example, very, very in a very focused way, if the world decides tech wear clothing is the lamest thing ever, which most people probably have, unfortunately for me, then, suddenly no one's going to watch videos anymore if you're allied too closely to one particular thing. So yeah, branching out is definitely a good thing. And I think looking at things more collaboratively as well. Like, don't be scared to work with other people, to take other people's advice, to take inspiration from other people and do stuff together. It's definitely more difficult to do that. Definitely the videos where I've worked with other people have been more difficult to execute than a regular video. But the final output is always something that I've been really happy with. And that's definitely something that I want to do more of going forward, to just, that's partly the reason that I reached out to you, because I want to talk to more people. I want to do more stuff. I want to just have interesting conversations and do things. So yeah, that's definitely something that I would like to do more of, and it's something that I wished that I had done more earlier. So that's my number one piece of advice. Also, invest in lighting, because lighting makes a really big
It
difference.
does.
Don't forget about the lighting.
Lighting and audio is almost more important than video quality.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mobile camera with good lighting is better than $1,000 camera with bad lighting. 100%.
100%. I agree. I agree. This is Antoine. This is Adidas. This is whatever it may be. Thank you so much for joining me on the pod. You've been a pleasant. Like, I want to meet you in real life. I want to play Mario Kart in real life. Like, that's what I want to do.
Let's do it. I'm
Let's
down.
do it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been really good. Yeah, it's really nice to talk to someone else that does something similar to me. It can be a very isolating experience doing this stuff. You spend so much time alone, locked in your room, editing video, recording video, scripting stuff. So yeah, just being able to speak to someone else that does something similar is really good. So yeah,
Anytime you
thank you
want to
so much.
chat, hop on a phone call, whatever it may be, my line is always open. I want you to know that, because it's the same for me. Like, I actually have a lot of respect for you after listening to what you've had to say, and I can tell you have a good head on your shoulders. And so it's good to have people like that in your corner and in your circle, so we can talk at any junction, anytime. This is, even though this is in the pod, I want you to know that.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much.